succession number 23363, reel 2.
Reg Best, reel 2. We were talking about the type of radio equipment that you have.
Yes. Well, we didn't carry it on our backs. It was all in vehicles.
What sort of vehicles did you use?
To start with, we had what we called gin palaces. It was sort of square box on wheels as a divisional commander. We had a General Thomas who was a very abrupt and grim sort of chap. Working the brigades, when I was at Div headquarters, I was his operator in the gym palace. We sat in the front in a row, thing about 3 feet wide, enough for a seat, and the radio set in front of us. And the divisional general and his brigade, staff, would be in a space here a bit behind, about three or four of them, running our part of the war. And we'd just send the signals. They poked a signal through the hatch and probably signal to brigades. Later I was in a similar position with... I mentioned that later when we finally get to the active part of the war. Yeah, intelligence officer was one of the Foots, not Michael Foot. There was I forget his Christian name. There were three or four brothers, a Plymouth family, I think. And one of them was the intelligence officer. He's very proud one day to set up his, in Normandy. Set up his area. They used to put a canvas extension out on the side of their LCV, something command vehicle. It was an official name, but the gym palace on the side of the gym palace. And he'd closed it in, blacked it all out carefully, and got all his maps up all around, very proud of them, and got his tower cap marked all the positions for people. Nothing to do with us, it was the operational side for the general and whatnot. And then he got very proud. He brought a big tilly lamp to light the place up. Looked brilliant. What he didn't take into account, it was quite a lot of heat came from his tilly lamp, and he set the place alight with all his he managed to put it out. Anyway, that's by the way, where were we?
how long had the signals unit been established?
The Royal Corps signals. Well, they were with the yeomanry, I think, to start with, because they... Well, that was another thing they gave us right at the beginning, a bandolier, which was useless, except you had to polish a damn thing. When did the signals start? Vague idea, it was about 1920, officially, the Royal Corps signals. I don't know much of their history, sorry.
What can you remember of the officers? Did you find them to be competent?
Well, we were in a section, and later on, the junior officers... Well, yes, some were. They varied. But in the 43rd signals, we were very much a group that stayed together, and the sergeants were very, very good, I think. And we used to think that we ran the show, more or less, and didn't worry too much what officer was sent. In fact, when we come to Normandy, I lost my officer in the first few weeks over there. He was killed, and they left me as a sergeant to run the section, which suited me. And it was a long time. It was right up into up at Nijmegen. it's another story when we come to it, that I was relieved and they sent an officer along. Yeah.
So as signals unit, were you based mainly around the London area?
No. No, we based, went to Mere, and then we had a brief respite when they decided we would go to Norway. So with our gym palaces, we all charged up there collecting the cheers and waves from the young ladies on the way, or especially in Nottingham. Very nice girls we decided they had in Nottingham when we went through there. Some of the other places not quite so good, but we were there to receive any acclaim that was granted us, although we haven't done anything. But it was at last we were going abroad, you know, and we got as far as Greenock, and they decided, Churchill himself actually decided that we wouldn't continue the invasion. We were to invade Narvik. It was all planned. Did a 25-mile route march in full gear on a very hot day, wearing underwear, all the rest, you know, long pants, that we were kitted out for the for Norway. That was grim. Taps were flaking out on that march. It was very grim. Had to take everything, because anything that was left behind they'd take away. And some people had bought all sorts of extra things, you know, apart from the chocolate that we used to stuff in our respirators and whatnot. You had a few personal things you liked to carry. And if you wanted to keep them, we had to take them on that route march. Even if it was only a Bible or something like that.
What happened after that, after the route march?
I got word that we weren't going. I volunteered, actually. They wanted a small number of volunteers. I often wished they wouldn't let me go. I said I was too young. I was still only 18. They wouldn't let me. Wouldn't let me go. Which I was sorry about afterwards, because the chaps who went in this Y force or something it was called, it was sort of a unit on their own, intercepting signals and whatnot, and linked in some remote way to Irene's lot. You know, my wife was with the Bletchley Park. You may interview her separately.
Another story.
This wife, anything like that would have interested me a lot, but no, I didn't go. So we went all the way back, with everybody no longer waving to us on the way back. Went back, and that was at the time of the evacuation for Dunkirk. And we had to take some of the chaps in. We stopped in Hertfordshire, and there I was with Div HQ, had our gym palace part there. I had a new chap sent to us, an electrician, and Irish chap, and he kept on annoying us by telling us what happened on the far side. You come back, you see, from Dunkirk, and been over with the expeditionary force, and what he'd done there. I don't think they did a lot, really. They did that. But everything was what happened on the far side, he kept telling us. So when we put up a tent to sleep in, this time charge of the wireless truck. I just made an article, well, that's right. And I was sat on the steps of the wireless one day, because this tent, three of us slept in the row, and when he came along we had to fit him in. So we fitted him down the bottom for the welcome, and across the bottom good food was our side, alongside of this tent, and he turned out to be sort of tempted. He hit me in the eye. He hit me back on. Wow. About it. We got on all right. In Germany, after we crossed the line, he was shot in the foot. Boston.
I know what you mean.
Yes. Yes, and so he wanted all his Bibles and deal with the matter himself. Well, we got on afterwards. Anyway, to retain my high rank. They've been wireless operators. I was in charge. And that's so true. So, called the Washington War Office sort of thing. Yes. Didn't stay in Hertfordshire, were there to stop any invasion. In fact, we sort of termed ourselves as the Kent Home Guard. We were there so long, we had stayed in Kent right up to D-Day. 40.
Did you have much opportunity to mix the local population?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, the old girlfriend here and there.
What was the general feeling of the people about the war, the local people?
Well, they were having to make do with heavy rationing. Strain. When would we have D-Day?
Were you affected by the shelling across the channel?
Oh yes, I was in Dover Castle. Yes, from Browning's brigade, I went to the 214 brigade, I think, or the one that replaced him, I think, and they were in that area. Our brigades, three brigades, were spread over sort of 20 square miles each, or something, you know, this sort of thing. And the brigade headquarters was in the castle. Yeah, up on the... right up on the top. I don't know if you've been to Dover Castle, but you've got the church on the top. And we were just outside, and we dug a hole and buried our set down there, mate. And you say, affected by the shelling, we used to watch the shelling on a clear day. You could sit on top of this hill, look across, and you'd see the flash of the guns in France. And you had time to say, oh, another one coming. Sort of read a few more lines of the book if you were lying outside, as I was sometimes, if you were not on duty, on the grass, and wander down into the funk hole. And then, of course, in Dover Castle itself, the down below, there was a wave of it was a hospital and God knows what they and the general, sorry, not general, Admiral Ramsay ran his headquarters and his part of the war from there.
Were you in that communication level underneath?
No. No. We you say affected by the shelling, they never landed a shell on the top of our castle, but they did shell the town, and sadly they hit the market square and the cafe, which we used when we could get down for a coffee or something, break in the morning or whatever, and we got friendly with the waitresses and whatnot, and one of those we were all sort of friendly with, she was killed in this case. But a number of people were killed in Dover. Remember going to Dover Hippodrome, if there was anything on the theatre anywhere near I could get to, I always had to go. All my leaves I went and saw sometimes two shows a day in London, and we got to leave. We got 7 days leave. We were very generous every 3 months, really. And you got 10 days leave normally, so I'd spend about five of them in London, spending all the money I've got, going to a lot of shows, drinking quite a lot of beer, and then go home and say, sorry, broke, feed me. And my mother, of course, saved all the food I was going down in Salisbury.
And, what was the reaction of your local friends when you turned home?
They were all away. They were all away in some place or another. They were, and a number from the school were actually in the 43rd Signals. So I had a few friends there. And, the two friends I joined up with, they'd drifted away after years. One's father was awfully annoyed with me because he was a major or something. He said, why did he go and join like that? He could have got him a decent posting or something. If he'd left it here to arrange, said let City Fool take him to sign up on the steps of the drill hall that Saturday night. Yeah.
Can you remember any big celebrities you saw in the shows in London?
Yes. So none of the Crazy Gang shows. One Crazy Gang show was on at Victoria Palace, where the shows used to be. And I got there and couldn't afford a seat, all the cheap seats. I don't really have to buy a gallery seat or whatever to see a show. Been in the pit very often. And I had to get back that night to Kent, a train from Victoria down. So just had time, the shows were earlier then, probably started about 5 o'clock. So, and I couldn't get a seat, and the theatre manager must have seen me standing there looking forlorn and said, what's the matter, Tommy, or something? Told him my sad state, said, leave it to me. Gave me a ticket in the third row of the stalls, sat on the end. When the chorus came up, they had to go into the audience and pick somebody to go up and do some silly dance or something on the stage for a break and go back. Florence Desmond was in that one, I think. Florence Desmond and in the Crazy Gang. And I remember saying, well, what do I do now? She said, well, you follow me. And she tried to make herself sound so posh, thick with grease paper. You know, you wonder what she was like underneath, sort of thing. And she said, and then I go this way. Then you twirl around and I sit on your knee. I said, and what happens then? She said, that's up to you. I thought, well, should I have dated that one? And to hell with the last train home. Took that medicine I might have got. But no. No. Not sorry I missed that one. Where were we? Lots of shows, yeah, they were good. Yeah. I could show you, I've got a book somewhere. And it's not very interesting because we didn't have a camera. Photographs. I did it quite. But anyway, I'll find
Dover Castle.
I wouldn't think it was more than about 6 months.
And where did you go from there?
I went, the unit got together without being sent out to be. Oh, but that. No, must have been a gap. Because in between, I was promoted to sergeant from this high rank of the last squad's corporal, which they gave me. Yeah. We went, we had a number of courses. It's made a break, although they were arduous. All the PT course at Aldershot nearly creased me. But, and then, especially when it came to the boxing. And I finally drawn against some French Canadian and they'd let out of jail or something to join. Anyway, that was by the way.
Did you find your sidestepping an advantage?
Yes, I don't know.
How did you fare against him?
Oh, I lost that one. Now, I think I've beaten some of you before, but he was a tougher, a bit of a Mike Tyson type. Yeah, but.
And did you have to keep on going on radio courses? Was the equipment changing and
improving? No, I only did one radio course, which I took quite seriously, actually. I even lost a girlfriend I had at the time on straight to that course because I decided I must devote myself to the course. And I don't know. We had two courses at Harrogate, where there's a school of signals for junior NCOs and senior NCOs. I did both of them actually. They were tough, and I had to make the most of them. And there were drill courses, you know. So, but I'd hated all that drilling. But when it came to drilling the squad as a lance corporal in the first course or sergeant in the other, I didn't mind that. And I mean, for the fun of thing, bawling them out, you know, which they were sort of encouraging to do. You pick on some mate who got on the course with him, just standing there, where were you doing last night out there?
So what other duties did your high position of sergeant mean you had to do?
Orderly sergeant some of the time. But, well, yes, I was then placed in charge of section sergeant of the section with one officer, and they formed a new section called N section in the signals just to provide new communication from divisional headquarters to the field companies and the engineers, which turned out to be quite important because they were either bridging, which was important, or mine clearing, and after D-Day, my job was to go out, and we haven't got there yet, have we?
So were you introduced to the benefits of the sergeant's mess?
Oh yes, yeah. No, we had quite a good, as I say, quite a good crowd of sergeants here, and the sergeant major. I was caught one day coming back late. I had a girl up at the barracks. Gentleman, as always, I took her home after the dance and whatnot. Came in about 1 o'clock, and chaps next day said, you're for it, orderly sergeant, or the orderly officer, so you're coming in. And true enough, it put me on a charge for that as a sergeant. I was quite lucky, really, because they're just having a discipline blitz, as they did sometimes, and I could have been busted. In fact, when I think of things, it's lucky I didn't get busted. But, oh dear. But the sergeant major, he'd be going up with this girl's mother, the young girl that I'd taken home. And he went in. I was marched in, you know, went left, right, oh, salute. then they send you out while they decide the sentence. And afterwards I was told that it was just a warning or whatnot. I forget the official term for it. And I could go. I was going on leave that day. Irene was waiting for me in the Victoria, the pub opposite Victoria Station. I was late, but having to go on this charge, but I made it. And the sergeant major said, I told him, yeah. I said to him, I said, he used to swear a lot. You need your bleeper on now. He said, if you sack him, where are you going to find a, that is a bleep? Another one is good. And on the strength of that, in spite of the discipline blitz, got away with that one.
You mentioned that you were going to meet Irene. Where had you met her originally?
Through my best friend early on in the war, who still stayed friends with till after the war. He went to SAS and married a girl. He met a girl who worked at Bletchley Park, and so through him and Irene being friends with this other, his girl, I met her then. I didn't see a lot of her till after the war, a year or two after the war, when I came back from civil service abroad.
Did you have much connection with the people working at Bletchley Park?
None.
As a signals unit?
Me, no. Some signals did. Chap I was on the course with, Ginger Hughes, he was there, and he was dropped behind the lines in Greece, and they worked back to Bletchley Park or wherever the signals place for it was. Quite secretive sort of stuff.
Was the existence of Bletchley Park widely known amongst the signals?
No, it was only, I knew of it because of my friend John being involved when he volunteered to be posted to the SAS. And he had went in at Sicily and whatnot. But, yeah.
So, what was the next thing you did